You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. I'm the Nothing But Net channel. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and College Hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 Show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at LockedOnBulls. Like us on Facebook, Facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. You can hit us up with your text messages, your voicemails. We do mailbag every single Wednesday. That's tomorrow's show, so we're going to be playing all of the voicemails you guys have left us over the last week. So if you still want to be a part of it, drop us a voicemail, a text message, 331-979-1369. All right, without further ado, we've got David Haw from the Chicago Tribune on, longtime sports columnist, and he also works over at 670 The Score. You can hear him on 670 AM in here in Chicago. Also read all of his work over at the Chicago Tribune, Chicago Tribune Sports. Matt held it down for me, but this conversation was very interesting, and I think Bulls fans are going to be intrigued. He talks about Jabari Parker and Zach LaVine's expectations for this summer. What kind of pressures on Fred Hoiberg to succeed this season, and also whether he's pro-tanking or pro-competing. All of that in this interview right now. So without further ado, David Haw from the Chicago Tribune.
Right now, we're very pleased to welcome back to Locked On Bulls, one of the staples of Chicago sports media. He is David Haw, lead columnist for the Chicago Tribune sports section. You can also catch him on the sports radio airwaves at 670 The Score, and also as a recurring guest of Sports Talk Live on NBC Sports Chicago. David, how you doing, man? Good to talk to you.
Doing well, Matt. How's your summer?
Pretty great so far. Obviously, some wild twists and turns as a Bulls fan paying attention to an offseason that hasn't seen a whole lot of unexpected occurrences, except obviously the Jabari Parker homecoming to Chicago. You, I know, actually ended your summer vacation by immediately beelining it to the Advocate Center to see his introductory press conference and then wrote about it. I liked how you talked about in your column following the Jabari intro that he seemed to have a bit of an edge to him in his Chicago homecoming. What were your thoughts on how he handled himself at that podium?
I was surprised, Matt. I think that it reminded me just how far he has come in terms of going from a kid we saw grow up in Chicago at Simeon and go to Duke and kind of, I don't want to say innocently grow up in front of the spotlight, but Jabari always struck me as a pretty happy-go-lucky kid, a guy who represented the city and his school very well, and I think he still does. But he's all grown up now, and there's no doubt that the weight of professional basketball has sort of taken a toll a little bit. And I think he came back home to Chicago with a chip on his shoulder and with something to prove. And I think that that's appropriate, and I think that's fine, because he would not be the first athlete who you know, use some sort of perceived slight as motivation. But I think that he looks at the way maybe he was dismissed by the Bucks, maybe looks at the way people have questioned whether or not he can come back from two knee surgeries as fuel to propel him to get back to the level he thinks he can play at. Can he get to that level? I don't know. But I think that the Bulls did a smart thing in giving him the opportunity to prove himself with a contract that makes sense in terms of structure and, you know, essentially reducing it to a prove-it deal.
Yeah, you certainly seemed in your column to say, let's look at this as a low-risk contract that maybe has a good amount of upside to it for a guy who was a former number two overall pick, projected to be a star in this league, coming in. And even though the Bulls are going to pay him $20 million this coming season, which is probably based on his current resume an overpay, similar to Zach LaVine, it's paying for the potential, and it's a low risk with that second year being a team option. The issue I have, David, is that just because it's a quote-unquote low-risk contract with the team option doesn't necessarily mean it's a good idea to begin with. What are your thoughts on the general conception or the general notion going around Bulls fans that Parker might not be an ideal fit in this roster right now, even if he is a young player with some upside, barring those ACL injuries?
I kind of, with due respect, kind of chalk that up to some natural skepticism. I don't think this front office has earned the benefit of the doubt. Certainly, you know, you know that John Paxson and Gar Forman are pretty polarizing still. It's funny because I know it's a different sport, but the same market. But like if Theo Epstein were to bring in somebody who, you know, was coming back from an injury and was on a 1 year prove it deal, it'd be like, wow, look at this. This is really what a great idea. And I understand that because he's won the championships and he has the background and the pedigree. When the Bulls do it, it's like, oh boy, this is not a good fit. He's a ball stopper, not going to play defense, and it could be an attitude problem. And those are concerns that are valid. But you've got a 23-year-old asset who was a number two overall pick in the draft not that long ago. Two knee surgeries ago, but not that long ago. So when you look at where they are in the midst of the rebuild, and when you look at what the goals and the objectives have been identified as, and that's talent acquisition, asset accumulation, he fits. And from a schematic standpoint, that's going to be the challenge of Fred Hoiberg. This is where you continue to find out after last season where I thought Hoiberg took a mini step forward. I think that you need to see him take a major step forward. And this is going to test the progress of your head coach.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Fred, because for all of the eyes that are going to be on Jabari Parker this upcoming season as the surprise addition to this rebuild, he's coming into year four of a five-year deal, but really just year two of this rebuild, where he was given finally the pieces that he wants and is looking for, especially to run his offense after the tail end of the Rose Butler years and then the misguided signings of Rondo and Wade just a year ago. Now, looking, as you said, to the scrutiny of Fred Hoiberg and whether or not he actually has what it takes to be a good coach, because we keep hearing this phrase player development and young player development from the Bulls front office. And obviously that is first and foremost Fred's job. Based on what we saw in year one working with this young core, do you have faith in Fred Hoiberg molding this young core and bringing the rebuild closer to contention? Or do you think the Bulls after this season might be looking in a new direction and then head coaching spot?
Well, man, I'm not gonna cop out there, because I don't like when people do that. But here's how I'll sort of frame that. You know, we just described how Jabari Parker is in a prove it year, and to ask somebody right now is Jabari Parker part of your long term plan with the Bulls? I think the answer includes the reality that he's got to prove himself next season on the court, And much the same way, I think that this is a prove-it year for Fred Hoiberg. I think that when you look at his contractual realities and when you look at where the Bulls are in their growth and what he has been through and what the ground there still is to cover, that the answer to that question will unfold over the next 9 months. I think that it would be an educated guess right now, and maybe an educated guess based on bias one way or another, to say whether or not Fred will be – you know, part of that when they get good again. If you like Fred, you're inclined to agree that he's going to be there and he's going to be the coach and he's the right guy for this development project. If you, you know, see flaws in him and you don't like his personality or whatever, you're going to say, well, he's not the guy to get him over the top because they need to be a little more tougher minded defensively. I'm probably leaning toward the fact that I think he's very good for a young core. I think he's got the right temperament for a group of guys who ideally will grow together and have their personalities mesh. He's a very amenable professional former athlete and coach. He knows what it takes. He gets it. I like Fred. I don't know that he's going to be the coach of the next Bulls Eastern Conference, you know, final participant. I don't want to go that far. But I do think that when you have a core that you're trying to develop and teach how to be a professional and how to handle ups and how to handle downs, you could do a lot worse than Fred Hoiberg.
Going back to Jabari for a second, because you touched on the defense question, which is a big one. And also you mentioned maybe a little bit of a question mark about attitude, whether that was partly from his edginess at his intro, or also, as I'm sure you have heard, his when he made the rounds of all of the different Chicago sports radio shows was really pressed about that whole notion that he is going to be a hole on this defensive end, especially paired with Zach LaVine at the two, who has his defensive weaknesses himself. And Jabari's response, David, was pretty shocking to me, saying, hey, they don't pay anybody to play defense in this league. The Bulls aren't paying me to come here and play defense. They're paying me to come here and get buckets. Some people are saying good on the kid for being honest about it. To me, it's still not exactly a great move from a PR standpoint. And his Simeon buddy, Derrick Rose, as Bulls fans know all too well, had plenty of foot and mouth moments when it came to doing interviews. What were your thoughts on his comments about defense?
I think he wants that one back. I think he's probably looking at that as, you know, pro athletes very seldom regret what they say because they don't want to admit any sort of weakness, but I think he probably finds that regrettable. Look, they're paying Jabari Parker well to be a complete player. They're paying him to play both ends of the court. They have obviously are playing him they're paying him to play defense. You've got to look at it that way. And it's like a baseball player, you know, who is a home run hitter, and they're not paying him to run out ground balls to first base or to play defense. It's ridiculous to think that he's not here to participate defensively. That's going to be the biggest question mark about this Bulls team. Can they stop anybody? Not just people. Can they stop anybody? Are they going to be any team in the league worse than them defensively? I think he probably got a little carried away in the moment. I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt if he comes back and start clean. You know, media day, we're not gonna start waiting for Jabari to put his foot in his mouth every time. I think he's a little edgy, and I think he was a little edgy that day, and it sort of kind of this sort of confirms it. But he's got to play both ends, and you know, he came from Duke, and I know he's only there a year. But they play all around there. And Mike Krzyzewski, you know, at one point in time was known as a pretty good defensive, you know, head coach as well. So he's got it in his basketball DNA. He knows what's right and what's wrong and how to play the game. I just think he spoke out of turn.
As we're talking with Chicago Tribune's David Haw here on Locked On Bulls, you can follow David on Twitter at David Haw. Before we move on from Jabari, because I want to get your thoughts on LaVine's matched contract as well. There was a quote you had in your column reacting to Jabari's introductory press conference from Fred Hoiberg saying this was 100% a basketball decision. Now, I count myself among some of the skeptics to say, I look at that quote and I say, that's BS. Obviously, they are, as you said, in talent accumulation mode, and he is a young player that they believe can fit into this roster and play the three. I have my doubts about that as well. But to say that this is a 100% basketball decision, and I know that's Fred, that's not the front office saying that, good on him for trying to put that fact out there. I don't believe that. I see this being a classic Bulls front office move to say, well, it's an exciting name. It's a Chicago guy. He's going to sell us jerseys. He's going to sell us tickets. So to me, it's completely irresponsible and false and kind of a slap in the face of informed Bulls fans to say, oh, this decision is all about basketball, because I think that's false.
But he's a basketball coach, so he's going to look at it that way. And I think that I would agree with you And he's never going to acknowledge the, you know, the other factors that, that could be in play. I don't think the Bulls signed free agents. Well, let me say this. I don't think the Bulls signed this free agent with box office in mind. I don't think that was
not even a factor.
I think it probably. I don't think they went out and they said, "Well, we're worried about our season ticket base, and let's go get Jabari Parker." I think that they probably will benefit from that. But let me finish. I think that there's a symmetry that, you know, Jabari Parker signing with the Bulls represents that was appealing to them in some way. I think they had the press conference at the atrium of the United Center with a podium and with pageantry that probably would not have accompanied your typical 2-year contract free agent signing. So I don't want to dismiss the peripheral stuff that probably played a role as a bonus. And they said, you know, this is nice. This does fit into our culture. This is consistent with the way that we approach, you know, our quest for relevance in Chicago and in this market. But, Matt, I don't believe it was the primary motivating driving force behind it. I don't think they went out and they said, you know, hey, bring Michael Reinsdorf to this meeting. Hey, Michael, what do you think? We got this guy with 2 knee surgeries, but we really need to boost the profile of this rebuild. Let's sign him. I don't think that was the heaviest factor weighing in. I do think it probably was a bonus to the thought process.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I think we might be a little bit apart on that, but I see where you're coming from. And I wouldn't say it was their primary motivating factor to sign him, but I do think it certainly was a part of the equation. And lastly, on Jabari, as far as this whole low risk idea, that the Bulls have themselves this team option after 1 year. My concern is this, David. Say hypothetically, and it's to me, it's not even a hypothetical. I think it's the most likely outcome for this upcoming 18-19 season. Say Jabari isn't great and doesn't blow everyone away and all of a sudden has an all-star season out of nowhere. And say he's not terrible. Say he's just okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Then the Bulls are facing a gross and similar decision to the one they faced with LaVine just now, where you're taking a guy with a mediocre sample of work to go from and also a pretty big injury risk attached to it and saying, all right, are we going to commit more big money to this guy as part of the rebuild? Because if the Bulls swing and miss on a bunch of the big names in 2019 free agency, their backup plan essentially is going to be paying Parker either the back end of that $40 million or even more possibly re-signing him to a long-term deal, paying him lots of money. That's the hypothetical that I don't like, and I see it as a very possible outcome. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that if he's has a marginal year, a kind of, you know, partly good, the way that you describe, partly bad, then one more year of investigation, exploration might be, you know, money well spent if you are also freed up from the cap standpoint, which I think they're in pretty healthy shape to pursue the free agents that you likely are going to miss. You know, I mean, this isn't, you know, the hypothetical is valid. It's a good question, but it's not as if the Bulls need to plan for what are we going to do when we sign this marquee free agent, because it's something that they haven't really dealt with. And so I think that, you know, fair enough that you're asking the question, but I think they're prepared for that. And I think they're also prepared probably to plunk down another 20-some million for next year if they don't know yet about Jabari Parker. And they're trying to – and I'm just trying to put myself in their situation. I'm a sports columnist, you know, who has opinions and tends to be, you know, cynical like the rest of the sports media. But if I'm in their position, I'm trying to look at this as the most positive outcome. And the worst it could be is that he's good and you want to give him another $20 million to find out if he can be better. So if I'm not prevented from chasing free agents because of my commitment financially to Jabari Parker, I'm okay with that.
All right. And I mean, while we're talking about guys the Bulls committed big money to that have ACL tears in their recent rearview mirrors, let's talk about Zach LaVine now.
Yeah.
I think you and I, from what I could see from your reaction to LaVine signing in your column at the Trib, are on the same page here, where you don't love the fact that the Bulls had to match that offer from the Kings when really before that Kings offer came, the Bulls seemed to have the front office seemed to have the leverage as far as negotiating with a guy who only played 24 games, looked okay in those games, and is also coming off an ACL. It's not like he was going to go out there and get all sorts of deals that the Bulls would have to match. the Sacramento Kings, the most unpredictable front office in the NBA, went out there and threw down an offer sheet for LaVine that the Bulls quickly decided to match. I don't love it, but I think it was still the right call when you're talking about a guy who has all the potential that LaVine has, and the Bulls see big things for LaVine as far as being a big piece of this rebuilding core. I think you might agree with me that he's probably going to be overpaid this season, but it's about the investment of his potential upside. What are your thoughts on LaVine signing that four-year deal?
I think they made the decision the minute they traded Jimmy Butler. I think that the decision went up to the wire, down to the wire after the Kings made the offer sheet and signed that and structured the contract. But I think the Bulls made that decision a year earlier on draft night when they made the deal, because when you put a guy at the centerpiece of a deal that changes the direction of your franchise and it includes a guy that's a top 15 NBA player, you can't let him walk for nothing. You just can't. So, yeah, pricey, yes, a little bit more than you wanted to pay, probably over his market value. That's the price of playing poker. And when you look at what he can be, you've got to focus on that if you're the Bulls. If you look at what he was in 24 games and you focus on that, I'm not sure that's a fair assessment of the player that he might become because of a lot of reasons. He was on a minutes limit that probably, you know, forced him to try to play the game faster in his head and make things happen quicker and more unnaturally. I also think he was probably relearning how to play with this new body, an explosive player who had a reconstructed knee. So I'm not trying to make excuses for him because I'm as curious as anybody what kind of player he will become. But I don't think the Bulls had a choice. I think they had to go this route, as you point out, for those are good reasons. And, you know, the question now is how he fits, what is his role, who's the first option. And that's going to be fascinating to see unfold.
Yeah, I mean, and we were talking a little bit earlier about Fred Hoiberg and the job he has in front of him this season, figuring out, especially offensively, how all these pieces fit together. We've talked about Jabari. We've talked about LaVine. Focusing on the other two pieces of that Butler trade for a second here, Chris Dunn, in my opinion, before he had that unfortunate injury in that game against Golden State where he had the nasty fall, messed up his teeth, got a concussion, he was playing really well for that stretch of December games when the Bulls were also playing well collectively as a unit. Looks like he was confident growing into his offensive role as the point guard and the main distributor for this offense. And defensively, looks like he has potential to become one of the better multiple position guards on the defensive end in this league. Lauri Markkanen obviously was the huge surprise part of the Jimmy Butler trade that none of us saw coming. We didn't think he was going to be that good this soon. Mm-hmm. How do you see Dunn progressing as the point guard, getting looks for Parker, getting looks for LaVine, trying to increase the versatility of Markkanen offensively? Because that's a lot of mouths to feed in a young team where everybody's trying to prove themselves.
If I'm Chris Dunn, I'm excited. This is an opportunity of his career. He's got to be the facilitator. He's got to take a mindset that he's going to be the guy that makes everybody around him better. He's got to be the guy that defensively is the shutdown, you know, point guard, get that back mentality that he had at Providence that he, you know, at times last year before the injury. I think he's defensively above average, and you can set a tone there. He's going to play with a lot of guys who aren't above average defensively. So he's got to set the tone. That's something about his offensive game we need to see in terms of a growth spot. But as long as he goes in not worried about who's 1, 2, or 3, and, you know, the right decision is getting the ball to the open guy, that's going to be what great point guards do. And I think he still can be, you know, a guy who's at the top half of the league in terms of point guards.
And when it comes to Markkanen, obviously Bulls fans really excited about this kid's potential. Some are saying, you know, he can grow into a top 20 player in this league. And some saying, well, maybe not that crazy good, but certainly he has all-star potential. We saw some of his big coming out games last season, primarily the one at Madison Square Garden, the world's biggest NBA stage. I am a true believer in Markkanen's ability to become a bona fide star in this league. Any concerns for you that this random throwing Jabari into the mix move is going to take away from Markkanen's development in year two? Or do you think it's just about making this Bulls offense more versatile and allowing Markkanen to find spots where he can be effective and opening up the floor. That is something Fred Hoiberg wants to do.
Great players become great because of superior talent, because of who they are and the kind of player they are. And to me, I think Lauri Markkanen is that guy. I think he's the best player on this Bulls team. I think he's got the highest ceiling. I think he's got all-star potential. I think he's going to have to learn how to play with guys who, you know, are quote-unquote ball stoppers. But I think he can. I think he's got it all. I think you see changes made to his body in the offseason that are promising. And if that element of the game, the physicality comes, this is a guy the Bulls can build around. And I think these players will come to understand. And I think everybody sees what Lauri Markkanen can become as a Bull.
And lastly, as we're talking about this Bulls rebuild going into year two, it seems like from your column about the Bulls matching for Zach LaVine, which happened right on the tails of LeBron's huge shocking announcement that he was leaving Cleveland and leaving the Eastern Conference and going to play for the Lakers, I saw that you were making a correlation between, okay, LeBron's leaving the East. The East is now maybe not wide open, but certainly more open than it was. The Bulls need to re-sign LaVine and really gear themselves towards, we're not going to tank anymore. We're going to try to be competitive and get back to the playoffs. Certainly that is the party line that John Paxson stated since the 82nd game of the 17-18 season, saying we don't want to have another season like this. We want to be competitive again. Certainly the Jabari signing reinforces that. Do you actually believe that this Bulls core, as it currently stands right now, coming into training camp, is good enough to make a playoff spot in the Eastern Conference? Personally, I see them going back to the lottery again after this season.
Possible, but they have an opportunity. They got six players that they have identified as sort of their young guys, core pieces. I think they go, you know, probably 10 deep. You got the emerging supporters, perhaps. You've got Denzel Valentine, who's worked himself into a role. Who knows what Robin Lopez will be, but he's pretty dependable if he's not used to flip for assets. But I think you have the makings of a team that can compete for a playoff spot, and I think that they are potentially good enough to do that. That's what your goal has to be. I like that's the rhetoric that's going to be surrounding this season rather than the tanking. And I think that there are a lot of ifs, but we talked about marketing. We talked about the main guys. You know, those four players, Markkanen, Dunn, LaVine, and Jabari Parker, that's a pretty good start. And I think when you look at I liked what I saw out of Wendell Carter in terms of the summer league. There are a lot of reasons to believe that the Bulls can be better than a lottery team. And that's on Fred. That's a little bit more pressure than he's faced in the past. Good. You know, welcome to Chicago, because this is when it becomes – you know, now the expectations get a little bit higher. Maybe their path and plan is a little accelerated, but that's okay, because I think they're ready for this, and I think the Bulls can compete. And thank goodness that when they win a game next year, hopefully people will say, oh, that's a good thing, and not like, oh, my gosh, that's going to drop, you know, their draft value. So I think they have a lot of reasons to be excited for the season, Matt.
So it sounds like you count yourself among those who want them to make the playoffs this upcoming season and be competitive this upcoming season, as opposed to some who believe that they should have gone back to tanking again in year two while still trying to do that youth development thing, but primarily citing the, you know, it's about accumulating draft assets, and you need at least a couple of swings in the high draft lottery to hit on that franchise-changing superstar player. The Bulls certainly seem to hit on Markkanen, and we'll see. It looks right now, early going, that they also hit on Wendell Carter Jr., but you're definitely in the camp of, all right, well, we did the 1 year of tanking. That's enough. Let's try to be competitive. Because in my mind, the reason the Bulls traded Jimmy and broke this whole thing down is that they were sick of being stuck in the middle, which is the worst place to be in the NBA. And if they sign Jabari pans out, they all play decently together in a weak East, they can go back as somewhere like five through eight seed in an ideal world, but then you're right back where you started with Jimmy.
They were stuck in the middle with veterans who probably had peaked. They were stuck in the middle with guys who were kind of fit together, pieced together, you know, with hopes that they would find a way to get back to the Eastern Conference Finals. They weren't stuck in the middle with ascending players. And I think there's a difference. And I think that when you look at who they have now, and the arrow's pointing up on the guys we have talked about. So the uncertainties of the top of the draft are too great, and I think we saw that underscored in this recent draft, that to say that it's better to try to lose games than try to get back to, you know, what people call NBA purgatory or NBA hell, whatever you want to call it, it's sort of just on the fringe of the playoffs, because you want to be there. You want to establish or reestablish a winning culture, and you don't want to get used to losing where it becomes so habitual. And I think that's where the Bulls, you know, if they go at it, if they would have, you know, what guarantee in this past draft, you look at a coin flip, dropped them, you know, from 2 to 7 potentially.
Right.
These are things that you can't control. So control what you can. You know, win games, establish a culture, build progress, and then go out and get free agents and draft smartly. And that's what they're trying to do. And I applaud that effort if that's the way they're going.
And you know what? That's a fair differentiation to make, I think, as far as talking about being in the middle, but being in the middle with young ascending talent as opposed to being in the middle with capped out aging talent. Real quick, David, before I let you go, I wanted to touch on a story that was written by one of your colleagues over at the Tribune, Dan Wiederer, who primarily covers the Chicago Bulls. I know you're actually on your way down to Bourbonnais right now for more Bears training camp coverage. If you see Dan, please extend to him applause and appreciation, because he wrote just an opus of a column about the James Jordan murder case, the father of Michael Jordan, which has sort of come back to the forefront because of one of the two men convicted and sent to prison for life for the murder of James Jordan is trying to get a retrial or trying to appeal in some way because of some evidence tampering or new details that have come to light. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the column that Dan wrote and this crazy story of the murder of Michael Jordan's father, which still seems to have so many weird unanswered questions to it.
Yeah, it's 25 years later, and the, you know, sadness and the mystery sort of continues. It's just a tremendous reporting job by Dan and the people at the Chicago Tribune, and it was really one of those things that you sat down and you studied some of the inconsistencies, and it made you really look at it maybe in a different way than you had. Maybe you haven't thought about it in a while, but it was enlightening, it was thorough, and it was well done. And I applaud all my colleagues at the Tribune for committing the resources to do what needed to be done.
I suppose I can't get you to put your detective hat on and give me your best hypothesis for what actually happened there.
No, I'm sorry. but I do like Criminal Minds and CSI and all those shows, but I'm not gonna play amateur detective.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, obviously, I don't blame you. I wouldn't want to do that either. David, as always, we appreciate when you stop by Locked On Bulls. He's David Haw of the Chicago Tribune. You can also catch him appearing on 670 The Score Sports Radio here in Chicago, as well as Sports Talk Live on NBC Sports Chicago. He's on his way down to Bears training camp in Bourbonnais. Make sure to catch all of his Bears reporting this end of summer into fall at the Chicago Tribune. David, thanks a lot, man. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Thanks, Matt.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, want to thank our guest in David Haw from the Chicago Tribune for joining us. You can follow him on Twitter at David Haw. Read all of his columns over at the Chicago Tribune or chicagotribune.com. We're live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern at 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Our text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. Hit us up with all your mailbag questions, your voicemail, your reaction. We want to hear it before tomorrow's show, so if you want to interact with us and be a part of tomorrow's show, hit us up at 331-979-1369. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley, and our guest, David Haw, today. We want to thank you, Bulls Nation. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Matt Peck, for David Haw, for Jordan Malley, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.